Today's WBFO brief was recorded at around 8:30 in the morning. This is WBFO News.
As far as Erie County is concerned, they're providing help to farms and agribusinesses that endured damage when a tornado ripped through Eden in July. County Executive Mark Polenkars says a $200,000 grant will be provided to Mam Mosier Farms, a third-generation dairy farm that sustained damages to many of its barns and other structures during the July 10th tornado. The county has made funding up to $200,000 available to damages at farms that were not covered by insurance. Well, thousands of residents more recently, last night actually, in Evans, Eden, Brant, and Angola were without power. According to National Grid, an equipment failure at a substation was behind the interruption in service. The hardest hit area was the town of Evans, where over 5,000 customers were affected, while Eden had around 800 customers affected. A Buffalo man pleaded guilty to charges of stealing more than $10,000 in collection basket money from a church in the city's Black Rock neighborhood. 67-year-old Francis Winarski was a volunteer at the Church of the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary, where over an eight-month period spanning 2023 to this year, he pocketed over $10,000 in money. Those charges for grand larceny still carry a maximum sentence of up to 7 years. He'll return to court December 19th for sentencing. Well, over in the town of Tonawanda, they've joined the list of local municipalities who are trying to ditch privately run ambulance companies in favor of a public service. While announcing the new initiative, town officials noted their current partner, Twin City Ambulance, has been experiencing staffing issues and increased response times, sometimes up to over an hour. Tonawanda plans to purchase 4 ambulances by the end of the year, partially offset by state funding, plus hire 15 to 20 EMS professionals. The town will still maintain contracts with private ambulance companies to supplement some of the load. The public service plans to take its first calls in the first quarter of 2025. They'll also be serving the village of Kenmore. Well, the beef between an animal sanctuary and a farmer over 2 cows in Newfane is now over. The Niagara County District Attorney's Office this week dropped its larceny charges against Tracy Murphy, owner of Asha's Farm Sanctuary, who in the summer of 2022 was accused of refusing to return 2 cows who wandered onto her property. A statement from prosecutors said the judge ruled they could not use evidence or testimony concerning the cows due to state police moving them from Murphy's custody directly back to their owners. The Buffalo News also reports it was revealed the lead state police investigator was the alleged victim's brother-in-law.
This WBFO Brief podcast is made possible by Canisius University, where high-flying griffs find a top-flight education. For the last 8 years, Canisius has been recognized on U.S. News' list of best colleges and universities. Learn more at canisius.edu.
Well, earlier this week, Governor Kathy Hochul signed 3 pieces of legislation aimed at providing certain protections to expecting mothers and new parents. The legislation includes a bill that will prevent commercial health insurance in the New York State Health Exchange from charging fees for enrolling when a person is pregnant. Additional legislation will also now require commercial health insurance to cover prescribed prenatal vitamins and expand insurance coverage for human donor milk in outpatient facilities. Senators and assembly members in support of the donor milk bill emphasize that increased access will help support parents who may have a hard time breastfeeding or may be unable to breastfeed, including same-sex couples. 2 area nursing homes are under scrutiny after being fined $10,000 each by New York State. According to the Buffalo News, the level of fines issued against Williamsville Suburban and Elderwood at Amherst are typically reserved for violations that result in serious physical harm. At Elderwood, personnel did not follow a resident's advance directive and did not immediately provide life-saving treatment when the resident was found unresponsive. State officials say better procedures at Williamsville Suburban may have prevented an episode of resident-on-resident violence. The assaulted resident was found to have a compression fracture in the spine and fractures to the left elbow and hip.
puck drops on the NHL season today, I'll tell you why the Sabres have everything working in their favor to end the playoff drought. Plus, the Bills meet an old friend in Houston on Sunday, and we get to know a local runner who's making history. I'm Jack Cruiser. This is The Scoreboard for Friday, October 4th. The expectation is to end a playoff drought that has lasted longer than a decade for the Buffalo Sabres. First of all, Lindy Ruff makes a difference on game day, given his experience. His internal understanding of knowing when to roll out which line will pay dividends. Ruff's defensive game plan of getting in shot lanes and breaking out of the defensive zone in a hurry will be a welcome sight for Sabres fans that have suffered through the same breakout scheme that has failed time and time again in recent years. But it's not just Ruff. It's the promotion of Seth Appert and his management of the power play that will make an immediate impact. When Coach Appert had J.J. Paterka and Jack Quinn in Rochester, the Americans' power play ranked third in the league. Even if the Sabres' man advantage can climb from bottom five to slightly above average, that would help the team win a handful more games throughout the season. Another reason for fans to believe is the depth of the NHL roster and the overall organizational depth. They rebuilt their bottom six forwards over the offseason, adding an entirely new line of grit and speed with Sam Lafferty, Beck Malenstein, and Nicholas Aube-Kubel. All of those additions were made with intention to become harder to play against. As far as the organizational depth, just look at the performance of the prospects during the preseason. For the first time in at least 15 years, their cupboards are filled with even more youthful talent in the system, ready to make an impact. If and when injuries occur, Buffalo has a plethora of talent to choose from to fill a hole in their lineup. Finally, the teams Buffalo will need to finish ahead of in the Eastern Conference are expected to take a step back. Last season, the Washington Capitals were the last team to clinch a playoff berth, and now they're banking on some players replicating the career numbers they put up a year ago. Another team Buffalo could leapfrog could be the Boston Bruins, who are currently in a contract dispute with their starting goalie. The Tampa Bay Lightning were in a wild card spot last season, and they lost their captain to free agency along with a top-pairing defenseman. The point is, there are numerous teams that were in the postseason a year ago that are in a faulty position. Buffalo could take advantage of that. Following their back-to-back games against the Devils in Prague, the Sabres will return to Buffalo and host Los Angeles next Thursday for the home opener. Niagara University is cementing itself as a running school on the shoulders of cross-country star Braden York. The senior from Auburn, New York, has been named the conference's Runner of the Week twice this season, a feat never before accomplished by a runner at NU. I sat down with Braden to hear his story and dive into the legacy he's leaving behind on Monteagle Ridge.
The sport and how running affects me as a person, it's a big outlet for me. Mental health is obviously huge nowadays. Having my outlet also be my sport. If I'm having a stressful day, I'll go out and I'll run a few miles. And that's kind of a big thing for me, knowing that I'm helping myself and I'm getting better while I'm doing it.
The full conversation I had with Braden York can be found on our website at WBFO.org. Last week, the Bills got pushed around by the Baltimore Ravens for their first loss of the season. Buffalo will face new challenges against a different team with AFC title aspirations as the Bills head to Houston Sunday afternoon. The Texans aren't as physically dominant as the Ravens are, and frankly, no one in the league has the personnel to replicate what Baltimore did to the Bills last week. What Houston is capable of doing, though, is spreading the Bills' defense out to open up space to run the ball. Yes, Buffalo will face Stephon Diggs for the first time since moving on from him this summer, but it's not as simple as focusing on him to shut down Houston altogether. While the offense runs through second-year quarterback C.J. Stroud, so far the only team to beat the Texans was in Week 3 when Minnesota's defense shut down Houston's run game. When you limit the ground game's impact, you don't allow the Texans to get on schedule or control the clock. If the Bills want to pick up their fourth win of the season, it doesn't necessarily matter how many catches Diggs has. It matters how well Buffalo manages the clock, wins at the line of scrimmage, and stops the Texans' run game. Kickoff on Sunday is set for 1 p.m. in Houston. The WNBA officially announced that Caitlin Clark has been named the Kia 2024 Rookie of the Year Award winner. Clark earned 66 of the possible 67 votes of the league's top honor for rookies. This has been The Scoreboard for Friday, October 4th. I'm Jack Cruiser for WBFO Sports.
For Theater Talk on WBFO, I'm Anthony Chase.
And I'm Peter Hall.
And we have a guest today, but first, Peter, I did get up to Jiva in Rochester and saw their production of Young Frankenstein with Vianne Cox's Frau Blücher. She's so funny. I can't recommend it enough. It's charming. Jiva, Rochester, Young Frankenstein. And you? You've been to the opera.
Yes, I went over to your neck of the woods, Rockwell Hall, Buff State, Buffalo Opera Unlimited, put on Mozart's Marriage of Figaro, and it was a real sort of stepping stone for that opera company. In my opinion, everything was first rate. The pit orchestra, the stage direction, the acting, the singing. Of course, you go to opera for great singing, and everyone delivered. Buffalo Opera Unlimited. Good for you.
I'd like to mention, too, we were just learning this as we come into the studio, is that Broadway star Gavin Creel has died after a brief and rapid journey through cancer. He was in Buffalo at the very beginning of the national tour of Into the Woods, that all-star production that went to the Kennedy Center from here. Alas, the great Gavin Creel at the age of 48. But this morning we have a special guest. I'm delighted to welcome someone who quite abruptly became Western New York's most prominent BIPOC theater critic. Just a social media sensation. We know her primarily as an actor. Good morning, Lizette de Jesus.
Good morning.
Thank you for coming.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.
But I also knew you as a Buff State student, where you were a star already, but then saw you in Significant Other and All My Sons.
Mm-hmm. All My Sons. Let me gush for just a second. You were fabulous.
Oh, thank you so much. It was a wonderful opportunity and obviously a fantastic script.
Yeah, good script. That Arthur Miller.
Yeah, he's all right, you know.
Yeah.
But what brings you here today is it's not as wonderful a script, but it was supposed to be a playful caprice. It was a Disney parody of Aladdin and Other Things that played a few weeks ago. And it was supposed to be parody, so people took it okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then people saw production photography, and suddenly it popped for people. White actors in turbans, harem pants, head scarves, curved shoes, big old mustaches, and Lizette de Jesus came out on social media and said, "What the heck is going on here?" Right? And then eventually the theater did too, kind of. The people who'd been involved said, "You're like, whoa, whoa, whoa." Well, the old question of race and inclusivity that's been discussed in the theater for decades got energized around the time of George Floyd, but certainly not concluded yet.
So, Lizette, how could all of this have been avoided?
I think it's really important to note that a lot of people had said something even prior to me. And I think that there are a lot of steps that have to happen in order to produce a whole show. And I think that it's a really unique position to be in when you're an actor and it's tech week and costumes come in and you can't really understand when did this choice happen and how culturally insensitive these costumes are. And you want to honor the work that you've done. So you resort to rationalizing.
Yeah.
I think hyper-rationalizing everything is the vehicle that gets us so far into making a really big mistake where we can't take it back. So I think from beginning of selecting the script, hiring folks for the script, to produce the script, design, things like that were rationalized because there's one line in the show that says, "Why is everyone white?"
Right.
And then it's poking fun saying, "Well, we're Welsh." And I think that just textually, that's not enough information to support satire of racism. This was a script that was produced in 2009. And obviously, that is a very, very different time than what we are currently residing in right now.
And I think that another of Lisette's points was more diverse voices at the table.
I think this is a very unique situation, because this was a show produced by white people. It's all white people as the production team, as well as the actors. So when these are very exclusive white spaces, how can white people feel liberated to speak up and have those conversations within their own community? On top of the hyper-rationalization, this fear of being seen as difficult is ultimately the reason why they got to completing their production in such a manner.
Right. Nobody wanted to be the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I could certainly see that.
Mm-hmm.
Lizette, it has been a delight always to speak with you, and thank you for being on our show.
Thank you so much for welcoming me on here. I hope these conversations continue to expand.
Let's do it. For Theater Talk on WBFO,
I'm Peter Hall.
And I'm Anthony Chase.
So don't forget to like or subscribe so you can help others find this podcast. And if you love it, leave a review too. The WBFO Brief Podcast and the award-winning journalism of WBFO's news team are made possible by our members. Thank you for listening.